Monday again? It's Monday again, Andrea Darlis.
I know. I can't believe it. Was it just Friday?
It was just Friday. And we have a lot of show to get to. The Sox fell to another tough game tonight. But you know what it was? It was Game of Thrones night at
the park. I wanted to go.
Do you watch Game of Thrones?
Wait, you too?
You got
Game
to binge it. This is the last season.
You're right. You have to binge it. No. It is so good. But I tried that too. I was like, oh, I can't get into that. I'm not into this whole medieval.
It's awesome.
It's so good.
If you want to understand politics, watch the Game of Thrones.
And there's such strong female characters
in it too.
Yeah.
It's the bomb. Seriously.
It is.
I like that you're bonding. It's Reverend Livingston studio with us over Game of Thrones.
We're stereo right here.
We are.
Yeah, I've tried many times to watch the show. I just have never.
It takes a little, like, iced tea. You know, you get used to it, then it's good.
There you go. It's true.
So I need sugar? Is it like sweet tea?
It's like sweet tea.
Okay.
Yeah.
But after you get into it, you'll love it.
I think so, too.
Guaranteed.
Give yourself, because I have to admit, the first episode I watched, I was like,
I didn't care for it.
Second, third, but by the third or fourth, I could not stop watching it.
And it's cold-blooded.
It is. Violent, sex. Yeah, there's a lot going on there.
It's a lot of mud. I watched one episode, there was a lot of snow and mud, and I just was out.
Yeah, because winter is coming.
Winter is coming.
It's a meme that I enjoy yet don't understand.
And it stars Mike Madigan.
Is that which character is Michael Madigan?
The Night King.
That's the bad king.
Yeah.
Did you say that's accurate?
I would agree. Yeah.
He even looks like him. He's just frozen.
Okay.
Well, Mike's frozen too.
So if I look at it through that lens, that will make more sense to me.
Oh, yeah. Just stay with it. We guarantee, right?
I agree.
You will become a fan out of this world.
You will. And then you'll have to watch all the seasons. I probably took 2-3 months to just watch it and just binge it. It was so good.
Okay. I did it on a weekend.
Did you?
Yeah.
Oh, I want to see what else you both watch. Do you also watch The Good Fight?
What's that?
Oh, he might like The Good Fight.
Oh, you will like that.
That's from the show.
Yeah, that's with Delroy Lindo and Christine Baranski.
Yeah.
Did you ever watch The Good Wife?
Yeah, a little bit, with Juliana.
Moore.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Not
yeah.
Moore, is that right?
Margulies. Yeah.
Margulies,
but she's not in the spin. It's all the characters.
The
and then the main one, Diane, joins this African-American law firm.
Right.
And it's very good. Isn't it, Patty? I got Patty onto it.
I used to love Damaged with Glenn Close. Did you ever watch that?
I like that, too.
That was awesome.
See, I knew you two would find it.
Damaged just... Glenn Close was just cold.
Oh, yes, she was.
I think you might like Good Fight, because not only is it the spinoff, and it's not on the air, so it's a streaming series, and it gets a little bit more graphic in both the content and the language.
But here's a great Netflix series for you. Well, I think it's from the BBC, but Peaky Blinders.
Every episode is the bomb. Esmeralda was the one that turned me on to Peaky Blinders.
It's the bomb.
What's the guy's name?
Three or four.
Killian Murphy.
Oh, that's doable.
Yes.
That's doable.
Peaky Blinders is the bomb.
It is the first episode
and the cinematography will capture you.
The music.
Yeah.
Oh.
I promise though I have a week off at the end of the month and
Handmaid's Tale.
Yeah, I got it. Everyone's saying I gotta watch that.
I tried watching it, I haven't got into
Patty
it.
Patty loves
yet.
That one.
Love makes you think and makes you, you know, realize how close we are one way or the other when it comes to how we treat each other and what it means to live in fascism.
Is it scary?
It's a little scary. It's a little scary. And but see, I love this. I love that we're figuring out ways. Now, do you both find that you binge watch something to unwind from all, like, especially now more than ever?
I do.
I get my food together. I got my big cheer. And I'm like, it's
me
on.
Too. Because think about it. We are, like, you know, and all of us, I think, to an extent, too, we are so constantly, from the second you get up, we're either, you know, watching the news or booking guests or covering the news or, you know, looking at topics. This is just so nice to just go home
Escape.
And unwind.
Like
and
the
binge.
Night of.
Yes.
You watch the Night of on HBO, I think.
No.
I've heard it was really good, though.
It's awesome. The transformations that take place in that are off the chain. You will see it before your eyes, and I give the actors nothing but kudos. The Night of is tight.
All Another right. one I binged was Empire. That's such a guilty pleasure, too.
I am watching that, and it's so good.
Isn't it great? It's just amazing that every week they have new original music.
I can only take so much of Empire, though. I got to be honest with you.
Oh.
The music.
Because it's a soap opera.
It is a soap opera.
It's the best.
We forgot we have to book the woman who does the set design. But when I come back, we will get her on the show.
Cool, cool.
Antonia Arcilli does the set design. Why do you can't get into it? Because it's too...
It gets too soapy for me.
That's why you don't like it. Okay.
Yeah, with the
It's real soapy.
Yeah.
Even the music, you know, it's like old school soap opera, you know.
Right.
But I grew up, my mother was watching stuff, and my dad would be like, "Who are you talking to on the phone?" Well, he said, "So and so killed so and so." And then, you know, it was so real, you know.
You know what you might like? Yeah. You might like the series Brockmeyer on the IFC.
I love Brockmeyer. That was off the chain.
That is really one. Oh, Hank Azaria as a washed up broadcaster
in baseball.
Deal.
I love it.
And there's fracking involved, which on the baseball diamond. Yeah,
it's got everything.
It does. It does. I feel like we're talking about TV, so we can avoid talking.
Yes.
So we can avoid talking about. Well, that's what I was gonna ask. Do you find that, because I think a lot of people want to escape now, and that's why we get distracted easily. And this was a terrible weekend in Chicago.
Ooh. Oh my God.
Reverend Livingston was the organizer of the protest last week that shut down Lakeshore Drive, and Andrea was talking about how impressive it was that there were no arrests.
Right.
Some people, you know, hated that it happened. Other people were surprised at how smoothly it went.
Sure.
What has been, first, before the weekend started, what was the reaction in general that you found?
Well, in public, it was good. On social media, it was rough.
Yeah. You know? Don't look at the comments.
Don't read the comments.
The trolls were trolling. But I respect people's comments about it, too. People felt inconvenienced and everything, but that was the intention. You know, I picked that date, the 2nd of August, for a reason, because yesterday was the 52nd anniversary of Dr. King's march through Marquette Park, where he was hitting the head with a brick, hostile crowds and the like, you know. And so, but he didn't have any kind of sanctions from Richard J. Daley. There was no strategizing with the police department. But, you know, according to his philosophy of love and everything else, he went there to free the oppressed and the oppressor. And so we wanted to have that same kind of impact and expose the South and West Siders to something they weren't accustomed to. I said, look, guys, there's no shuttered stores, no foreclosed houses on the block. Nobody broke an ankle because the streets are paved, you know. And so when you go back home, have a different level of dissatisfaction and understand that what you were born into doesn't have to be normative. And then for a lot of the Lakeview folk and Wrigleyville folk and everything, it was to make them think, what's going on that they would come all this way to let their voices be heard? Let me think, what is this about?
Right.
Because, you know, Chicago has been intentionally segregated, and we're trying to intentionally desegregate it. It's a tale of two cities, which leads to the kind of violence that you see. So when they were talking about gang warfare today, but the gang warfare is about individuals coming together as a group to create illegitimate or alternative economies to get at assets that segregation has pushed aside. Segregation does two things. It insulates and it causes desperation. So those that are insulated have the assets, maybe more, you know, than this, that, and the other, than those that don't have them, you know. So it's a go ahead, please.
And no, there's a lot of communities that are also resistant to people having the ability to even move into their neighborhoods.
Yes.
If there's a mixed housing, mixed income housing coming into the neighborhood, there was one on Milwaukee Avenue that a lot of people were fighting. And what I was surprised by were the number of people that didn't realize that more than half the people living in Jefferson Park actually qualified for that mixed income housing. They assumed that it's going to be, everyone was putting up signs that we don't want Cabrini Green.
Right.
When you use those words, it scares people and they think, oh yeah, we don't want the ghetto,
right.
we don't want the high rises here.
That's right.
And so there's a lot of resistance in throughout the city. Basically, it seems as though people just want, you know, they want where the trouble's happening for everyone to stay there, fix
That's
it
right.
where it is.
That's right.
And they of course, I'm sure the attacks were toward you about how, why aren't you marching in Englewood?
Right.
Why aren't you marching in Austin?
Right.
And that was, again, when the mass shootings, because I think that's what we need to start calling this.
Sure.
When there are over 73 people shot,
Incredible.
12 dead.
That's right.
That's a mass shooting in Chicago.
Absolutely. Yeah. I was telling Patty today on the phone that I was working at the TV station, and I do features on the weekend, and I was called off features to cover to go to Stroger Hospital on Sunday, and we were all out there with the media, and my I had one African-American photographer, one white photographer, and the three of us were all just talking and saying, you know what? And there was, at one point, you know, there were so many shooting victims brought to Stroger who were in stable condition, in good condition. And you were, I think you were at there at one point, too. There were there was a group over on this side and a group over on this side. And they were all different people going to see their loved ones. And a mom was just crying and crying and crying. And the three of us stood there and said, you know, someone just lost their son
right.
or their daughter. You know, this has gotten to a point of where everybody's now coming together saying, what can be done? And then we were talking amongst, you know, we're different ages, we're different races, the three of us, we were just talking. And we all, I mean, think of yourself as a kid. Mm-hmm. There were fights and hair pulling, course, and I'm yes. sure you had there, you maybe exchanged some fist fights.
I didn't hair pull.
It just, no.
I didn't punch
no.
very well either.
No, no. But I mean, like we all right, did yeah. things as kids. We all got into trouble and whatnot, but just what is it about 2018? Is it just, there's too many guns? Or when does a party turn into a mass shooting? And then we went over this today, too. Mm-hmm. Yes, this is a mass shooting because technically it is when more than three people are shot or and wounded. So this is definitely characterized as a mass shooting. People were taking exception with that term, too.
Sure. I mean, the urban setting kind of changes the context of how we view it. I mean, it's a Sandy Hook over the weekend, you
right,
know?
Yeah.
It didn't happen within a certain, you know, it's a Virginia Tech over the weekend. And again, that's not to be reductionist to those tragedies at all, but just in terms of showing how tragic it really is. But we're so used to it,
right.
You know? That's the scary thing, when we become numb to inhumanity. And these are human beings being cruel to one another. You know, black on black violence, blue on black violence, white on black violence, black on white violence, whatever. It's all violence. But for me, it's a symptom. It's a symptom of something else that is, it is the desperate cry that is expressed through violent action. And so what do we do to mute, to deal with the desperate cry, to pacify that? How do we reverse engineer the violence from the gun being shot to how this person got a gun to why this person needs a gun? You know, to reverse engineer that whole piece, and then you look at it, and typically, and people say this is an excuse, but it's not. It goes back to poverty. It goes back, I mean, I know people on the South and West sides who don't have working toilets. And tell me how irritating it is not to have a working toilet. No heat in the wintertime, no running water in the summertime. And again, I don't even want to be political because I'm tired of being political. But the mayor's been sitting on $500 million in HUD money for low-income housing most of his administration and won't spend it. And I know I talked to the cops Thursday. I said, look, you guys are out here on the streets. What difference would it make for a person if they had a decent place to lay their head down, if they were able to get up in some place that wasn't cracked up and bugs and roaches running around, you know, because you got $500 million there, you know? And so, and look, I love downtown. I love our beautiful skyline. I mean, I'm not against any of that, but it's about the equitable, you know, disbursement of assets.
And access to
yes,
opportunity.
And access, yes,
access to
yes.
opportunity. And people would say, I think the implication, whether people say it outright or, you know, allude to it, is apparently they just think that black communities are that way.
Right.
That they're impoverished and have gangs and are violent and will just kill each other. That seems to be the implication for many people.
And it's because of a lack of historical context. You know, I think last week we talked, not last week, but I was here last rather, we talked about the great, I love this great movie with Leonardo DiCaprio and Liam Neeson, Gangs of New York. Mm-hmm. And it's a great sociological study of when people come to this country and their rise in the country, right? And so, but the difference for blacks in America is that, you know, there was something that Irish, Polish, whatever could do, which was called marrying up.
Mm-hmm.
And so you would marry some. So the Italians didn't want a vowel on the end of their name.
Wait a minute, I know this one.
Yeah, right.
My mom married my dad.
Married up.
And she married an Irish guy. Wait a minute, right. I know this one.
You know, it's a, but blacks were, interracial marriage was against the law.
Right.
So then, sociologically speaking, the ability, and this happens in every society, not just America, was limited. You know, just like in India, there's the caste system.
Right.
So the real dark Indians are separated from, you know, the other Indians, you know, or even in Mexico, the darker Mexicans are separated from the Spaniards,
yes,
you know.
The European.
So, but it's tribalism, plain right. and simple. We find ways to separate ourselves in order to have power. That's all.
Let me take a break here. I know we're going to talk to Amy Guthin a little bit, but now we're starting to get some calls and texts. So let me see what we can do with our schedule to maybe do another segment so we can get to everyone's calls. 312-981-7200. More after this on WGN 720 AM. It's the Patty Vasquez Show with Andrea Darlis. Thank you for joining us on the Patty Vasquez Show with Andrea Darlis. We are live in the Allstate Skyline Studios and enjoying some rubber ducky cookies.
Oh,
that were dropped
so
off for you.
Good. Thank
by
you,
Nick.
Special Olympics. Yes, and Nick, the ambassador of the Special Olympics, my guy. Love you, Nick. Miss you.
Aw.
Thank you for the cookies. We are all enjoying them.
And his mom and he love listening to WGN. He's been an athlete with Special Olympics for 15 years and is also a global messenger. And he does speeches about how Special Olympics has changed his life. Life. Mm-hmm. This Thursday, they have their annual Chicago Ducky Derby on the Chicago River. It's a fundraiser, and he's been involved for 5 years. If you or anyone you know would like to help out Special Olympics and buy a duck, they're $5 for one, a quack pack is $6 for $25, a flock is $24 for $100, or a diamond pack is $240 for $1,000. And there's a link to his page, which is duckrace.com/Chicago/teams. Wow, there's a lot of numbers on this. /2362. I'll send a link to this on my Facebook page.
Yeah, I'll put it up too because I always buy a quack pack.
Buy a quack pack. How are those cookies?
Quack quack.
This is so very, very good.
They're excellent.
We've talked to Reverend Livingston actually several times on the show, in particular right ahead of right around when you announced that you would be shutting down Lakeshore Drive with a protest about the violence in Chicago, demanding that Mayor Rahm Emanuel step down was part of the protest as well. How did that work out? Did he do that part?
No. Not yet, but no. We're trying to make him as radioactive as possible so that his cronies will say, you know, we should do business with somebody else.
I want people to do better. I guess that in life, I just want everyone to just, including myself.
Sure.
We can do better. We can do better than this.
Yeah.
We have listeners who are calling in. Diane has thoughts on the violence in Chicago. Diane, what did you want to say?
Hi, everyone. Reverend Livingston.
Yes.
I'm out here in the western suburbs, suburban housewife. I can speak for myself. So the people I work with that we've talked to, my neighbors, my children who also have friends, and there's a resounding consensus here of how we feel. You're marching, trying to get your point across and trying to get some help with all the violence, correct?
Yes, ma'am.
Okay. And other people put out commentaries in the papers, and we have interviews with people in the news. But here's the thing that all of us talk about here in the suburbs. You want our attention. You want some help. You're pleading, crying for help. Do you know what we all are thinking out here? And I am saying everyone that I know feels the same way out here, mm-hmm. The people that I know. Mm-hmm. The people in those neighborhoods that are getting shot and their children, and we see the mothers on the news, and they're crying, and my baby, and this violence has to stop. Why? The biggest thing we're all talking about, they have a code of silence. They know their neighbor shot their son. They know the guy from the next block over killed their brother. They have a code of silence. They do not want to squeal on each other. If they don't want to help themselves to make their son live to see another day, we don't care. I hate to say we don't care, but we are turning a blind eye because we're like, the people living in those neighborhoods don't even want to help themselves. So why are we going to help them? They know Tom down the block just shot Darrell. But they're not telling the police when they come that Tom did it. So if you don't want to help yourself, there's nothing we can do about it anyways. That is what everyone is thinking out in the suburbs. So when you put that on the news or it goes in the newspaper, we are thinking there's nothing we can do or want to do, honestly, that we want to help when you're not going to help yourself, when you know who's doing the violence in your neighborhood.
You know, I appreciate what you're saying. I really do. And when I say this, I don't mean to be flip, but I imagine if they were raised where you were and you were raised where they were, that they would be saying the same thing. And that's the part of the problem is to have not just sympathy, but I'm not saying you have that, but to have empathy, to be able to walk in somebody else's shoes if they're born into this and if there are other forces also. There before the grace of God go I. And so when one starts working with folk, the hardest thing to do is to inspire the uninspired, to inspire the jaded, to inspire the betrayed, the disappointed. It's hard work to do that. But again, I'm telling you that if individuals were to trade places, is there something intrinsically better about someone that if they were in the same spot, they wouldn't be different? That's another question we have to pose to ourselves as well.
I understand that, but that is never going to happen. You're not going to be in my shoes, and I'm not going to be in yours. We can come together and say we would like to live that way. But in reality, and to save the next person's life, that is not going to happen. So until they
are we our brother's keeper?
You know what? If my neighbor shoots someone from the next block and the police come over and I saw my neighbor go home with a gun and the police come to my door, I'm going to say, yes, I just saw my neighbor Bob and he went up his driveway with a gun. So I would go over to his house and look. That doesn't happen there. There's a code of silence there. So if they can't help one another, we're turning a blind eye to your cause out there.
I guess it's too bad that Diane doesn't live in that neighborhood because she would be one of the people that would be helping out.
She would be snitching.
Yeah. But I mean, that's essentially, and again, we're getting a lot of texts, a text similar to Diane's. Thank you, Diane, for your comments and your thoughts. And I wonder if when Martin Luther King was marching, if people would say, I don't care. I'm never, this isn't going to change. I'm not going to do anything help either.
Oh, yeah. They hit him in the head with a brick.
Yeah. I live in the western suburbs, and I do call the police every time I see something suspicious.
You know what, though? I do have a question based on what Diane said as well.
And I understand her
yeah, view, and I do, part. and I do. I mean, so is there a code of silence? And number two, if there is, why?
Well, you know, she's talking about snitching. Because when you talk about the code of silence, that's with the police department, right? The blue code of silence.
And no, I mean the code of silence amongst the suspects.
No, what I was going to say, though, is that, and so one of the things we look at is that the code of silence has generated the code of fear, you know, and so then you have snitching and a code of fear that exists in the community. Because if you grow up in these areas, you know, if you grew up in the projects, for instance, the projects were built like prisons. There's a guardhouse, there's fenced in, there's rows and everything, kind of like getting you prepared for prison as you're growing up. Again, this is not to push any kind of victimology, but, you know, to try to teach someone, you need to tell what that person did, and then you don't know if justice is going to happen, because this same lady would want to be anonymous on a 911 call if she saw XYZ, because she wouldn't want it to be known that she's the one that called. Now, think about it, if you had a neighborhood that hears people say, well, so-and-so is the one that did it. And there is a price to pay for that. I'm not making an excuse, but it's a reality that, you know, that people, elderly people, seniors, you know, people who are not involved in the bang bang, you know, the shoot 'em up stuff, you know, there is fear, real fear of being taken out.
That's what the 224 says. The lady that just called in did not take into consideration that the threat of giving someone up, that your life is now in jeopardy.
Yeah.
And another listener from the 630 says, the woman in the western suburbs is not me. She does not speak for me, and I live in those suburbs. She is part of the problem. We're all part of the problem.
It's not a blame game.
No. I live in the western suburbs, and I do call the police every time I see something happening. Stop with the excuses from the 224. Hi, Patty. I enjoy the comments from your guests. As a white suburban male, I watch my dad and my uncles fix their own toilets when they broke. Same for the furnace and painting and landscaping, etc. They did not wait for HUD money to be released to solve their problems. When white America hears that people are waiting for government money to solve their problems, it ticks them off, and they assume that blacks are lazy and not showing any initiative. Maybe your guest can comment on that.
Well,
thanks.
If we're lazy, I think slavery gave us some credit. You know, we did a lot of work for free in this country to help build this country. So
you're going to set off a whole firestorm of texts right there.
Without a doubt. The truth hurts, you know. And the thing is who taught your daddy and your granddaddy to fix toilets? My father and grandfather could fix toilets, too. But, you know, something happened, you know, in America. You know, something happened where people were cut off. You know, when I was a kid, there were trade schools you could go to. They had shop classes, a wood shop, metal shop, and all that. And these things were taken out of the schools. So the question then becomes, are you a mechanical genius? Are you a Mr. Fix-It? I mean, what happens? How do you do that? And then what happens with the pressure of trying to make money? How do we survive? You know, and again, I'm not making excuses. I'm glad your dad and your granddad could fix toilets and do everything with their hands. So could my dad and their uncles. But guess what? I'm not my dad and my uncles. You know, they're from a different generation. I'm not a Mr. Fix-It. I'm going to call somebody, you know. I used to mow grass when I was a kid. I'm going to call somebody to come mow my grass, come landscape. I'm just saying, there was a generation where you did everything yourself. But look at the generation we have now. You know, everything is about the internet, this, that, and the other. It's different now. I'm not making excuses, but it's different.
Before I know we have more callers coming in, but I've got Amy Guth coming up in just a moment, who I'm grateful that she allowed me to bump her back a segment. I know
Thank you, Amy.
Yes, yeah. And we know that you are planning another protest.
Yes.
And this is going to be something that I think even more people are going to be very angry about.
Oh, my gosh. We're going to shut down O'Hare Field, possibly on Labor Day, the ingress and egress of traffic there, because we have to hit the pockets, the money, the economics. That's the only way people will be heard. We must affect commerce. And so, you know, I mean, and really, What's the difference in what we're doing and what happened on the Dan Ryan? They're both on federal thoroughfares. What's the difference?
This is the same way. Go ahead, Andre. I know you had concerns about
this. Yeah, no, my concern, I think, on multi-levels, I think now it becomes of you're affecting people coming to visit or people who don't even live here. And I wanted to ask you, too, and I told you I was going to ask you this, too, about the federal repercussions.
Yes.
Because then this becomes like a TSA-type issue with airport security.
Yeah, but we're not going in the airport. We're just going to be blocking people from going in and coming out or coming in.
A similar protest the day of the Muslim ban after President Trump took office.
And I'm saying, you know, Rahm sanctioned the Dan Ryan. That was federal thoroughfare. He didn't have jurisdiction over that. You know, and the police chief walked arm in arm with everybody. I mean, what's the difference in what we're doing and what they did back there? I mean, I'm sure Rahm can see they're both federal expressways.
All right. I know Bill and Brian want to join the conversation, but I want to thank our guest, Reverend Livings. He's like, what? He wants to talk to more people. No, yeah. I've got to get to Amy because she's been waiting.
Thank you, Amy. Yeah,
thank you so much.
thank you.
Reverend Livingston, if people want to find out more information about what you guys are up to, or if they want to just direct their texts at you.
That's right.
Because we're having this up. Where can they find you?
ByRahm 2019, like bye-bye, like B-Y-E, ByRahm 2019 on Facebook. Coalition for New Chicago on Facebook, and you can come directly at me on Twitter at GS Livingston, at GSLLIVINGSTON.
Before you go, I want to know why we pit the north side with against the south side, and why don't you go to the mayor's house, since it is about the mayor in many ways.
Well, I don't like messing with his house, but I have been there, though. I have been there, and it was cold. You know, he was in the window walking around with a sweater on.
that's an image we're going to leave on.
Cold or he was physically cold? Okay.
No, it was January. It was, okay. Yeah, he had like a Bill Cosby sweater on. Yeah. Cliff Huxtable.
And that's the image we'll leave you with. Thank you, Brian and Bill. I know you wanted to jump in here, but we will have Reverend Livingston on again, I'm sure, in the coming weeks. Be well, sir, and enjoy your ducky cookie.
I will.
See you, Reverend. We'll have Amy Guth when we come back in just a moment on 720 WGN.